mist enveloped Vin. She pulled slightly against the door inside the room, keeping herself from going out too far, then pushed mightily against the falling window. The enormous dark blast window tumbled beneath her, churning the mists as Vin shot away from it, straight up toward the roof. The window hit the ground just as Vin flew up over the edge of the rooftop. She landed on the bronze-plated roof, falling to a crouch. The metal was cool beneath her toes and fingers. Tin flared, illuminating the night. She could see nothing out of the ordinary. She burned bronze, using it as Marsh had taught her, searching for signs of allomancy. There weren't any. The assassins had a smoker with them.
I can't search the entire building.
Vin desperately flared her bronze.
Where are they?
Then, oddly, she thought she sensed something. An allomantic pulse in the night, faint, hidden, but enough. Vin rose to dash across the rooftop, trusting her instincts. As she ran, she flared pewter and grabbed her dress near the neck, then ripped the garment down the front with a single yank. She pulled her coin pouch and metal vials from a hidden pocket, and then, still running, she ripped the dress, petticoats, and attached leggings free, tossing it all aside. Her corset and gloves went next. Underneath, she wore a thin, sleeveless white shift and a pair of white shorts. She dashed frantically.
I can't be too late. Please, I can't.
Figures resolved in the mists ahead. They stood beside an angled rooftop skylight. Vin had passed several similar ones as she ran. One of the figures pointed toward the skylight, a weapon glittering in his hand. Vin pushed herself off the bronze roof in an arcing jump. She landed in the very center of the surprised group of people, then thrust her coin pouch upward, ripping it in two. As the glistening shower of metal fell around Vin, she pushed. Four people remained standing. Two of them wore mist cloaks. One of them was familiar. Shan Ellario. Vin didn't need to see the cloak to understand. There was only one reason a woman as important as Shan would come on an assassination like this. She was a Mistborn.
You?
Shan wore a black outfit of trousers and shirt, her dark hair pulled back, her mist cloak worn almost stylishly.
Two Mistborn. Not good.
Vin ducked as one of the assassins swung a dueling cane at her. Vin slid across the rooftop, then pulled herself to a brief halt, spinning with one hand resting against the cold bronze. She reached out and pulled against the few coins that hadn't escaped out into the night, yanking them back into her hand.
Kill her!
The two men Vin had felled lay on the rooftop. They weren't dead. In fact, one was climbing unsteadily to his feet.
Thugs. The other two are probably coin shots.
As if to prove her right, one of the men tried to push away Vin's vial of metals. Fortunately, there weren't enough metals in the vial to give him a very good anchor, and she kept hold of it easily. Shan turned her attention back to the skylight.
No, you don't!
Vin dashed forward again. She flipped a coin and shot it at the coin shot. He, of course, pushed back, but Vin anchored herself against the bronze roof and flared steel. The man's own steel push, transmitted from the coin to Vin to the roof, launched him out into the air. The other coin shot tried to spray Vin with coins, but she deflected them with ease. Unfortunately, he wasn't as foolish as his companion, and he released the coins soon after pushing them. However, it was obvious that he couldn't hit her. Why did he keep...
The other Mistborn!
Vin ducked to a roll as a figure leaped from the dark mists. Vin just barely got out of the way, flaring pewter to give herself balance. She came to her feet beside the wounded thug, who stood on obviously weak legs. With another flare of pewter, Vin slammed her shoulder into the man's chest. The man tripped and fell right into the skylight. Vin looked up, smiling evilly at the stunned Shan.
Take the warning, Ellen. It's time for me to go.
Vin couldn't face two Mistborn at once. She couldn't even beat Kelsier most nights. Flaring steel, Vin launched herself backward. Shan took a step forward and, looking determined, pushed herself after Vin. The second Mistborn joined her.
Bloody hell!
Vin spun in the air and pulled herself to the rooftop's edge, near where she had broken the rose window. Below, figures scrambled about, lanterns brightening the mists. Lord Venture probably thought that the fuss meant his son was dead. He was in for a surprise. Vin launched herself into the air again, jumping out into the misty void. She didn't have any coins left, nor did she have daggers, and she faced two trained Mistborn. She burned iron, searching frantically for an anchor in the night. A line of blue moving slowly appeared beneath her to the right. Vin yanked on the line, changing her trajectory. She shot downward, the Venture Grounds wall appearing as a dark shadow beneath her. Her anchor was the breastplate of an unfortunate guard, who lay atop the wall, holding frantically to a tooth in the battlements to keep himself from being pulled up toward Vin. Vin slammed feet first into the man, then spun in the misty air, flipping to land on the cold stone. The guard collapsed to the stone, but then desperately grabbed his stone anchor again as another elemental force pulled against him.
Sorry, friend.
He immediately snapped upward, yanked into the air as if pulled by a powerful tether. Vin saw a pair of forms drop limply to the venture courtyard. Vin smiled, dashing along the wall.
I sure hope that was Shan.
Vin jumped, landing atop the gatehouse. Near the keep, people were scattering, climbing into carriages to flee.
And so the house war starts. Didn't think I'd be the one to officially begin it.
A figure plummeted toward her from the mists above. Vin flared pewter and jumped to the side. Shan landed dexterously, mist cloak tassels billowing atop the gatehouse. She had both daggers out, and her eyes burned with anger. Vin jumped to the side, rolling off the gatehouse and landing on the wall top below. A pair of guards jumped back in alarm, surprised to see a half-naked girl fall into their midst. Shan dropped to the wall behind them, then pushed, throwing one of the guards in Vin's direction. Vin pushed against his breastplate as well, but he was far heavier than she, and she was thrown backward. She pulled on the guard to slow herself. The man crashed down to the wall top. Vin landed lithely beside him, then grabbed his staff as it rolled free from his hand. Shan attacked with a flash of spinning daggers, and Vin was forced to jump backward again.
She's so good.
Vin herself had barely trained with daggers. Now she wished she'd asked Kelsier for a little more practice. She swung the staff, but she'd never used one of the weapons before, and her attack was laughable. Shan slashed, and Vin felt the flare of pain in her cheek as she dodged. She dropped the staff in shock, reaching up to her face and feeling blood. She stumbled back, seeing the smile on Shan's face. And then Vin remembered the vial, the one she still carried, the one Kelsier had given her. Atium. She didn't bother to grab it from the place she had tucked it at her waist. She burned steel, pushing it out into the air in front of her. Then she immediately burned iron and yanked on the bead of atium. The vial shattered, the bead heading back toward Vin. She caught it in her mouth, swallowing the lump and forcing it down. Shan paused. Then, before Vin could do anything, she downed a vial of her own.
Of course she has atium.
But how much did she have? Kelsier hadn't given Vin much, only enough for about 30 seconds. Shan jumped forward, smiling, her long black hair flaring in the air. Vin gritted her teeth. She didn't have much choice. She burned atium. Immediately, Shan's form shot forth dozens of phantom atium shadows. It was a mistborn standoff. The first one who ran out of atium would be vulnerable. You couldn't escape an opponent who knew exactly what you were going to do. Vin scrambled backward, keeping an eye on Shan. The noblewoman stalked forward, her phantoms forming an insane bubble of translucent motion around her. She seemed calm, secure.
She has plenty of atium. I need to get away.
A shadowy length of wood suddenly shot through Vin's chest. She ducked to the side just as the real arrow, apparently made with no arrowhead, passed through the air where she had been standing. She glanced toward the gatehouse where several soldiers were raising bows.
Bloody hell!
Vin glanced to the side into the mists. As she did so, she caught a smile from Shan.
She's just waiting for my ATM to burn out. She wants me to run. She knows she can chase me down.
There was only one other option, attack. Shan frowned in surprise as Vin dashed forward, phantom arrows snapping against the stones just before their real counterparts arrived. Vin dodged between two arrows, her atium-enhanced mind knowing exactly how to move. Shan swung her daggers and Vin twisted to the side, dodging one slice and blocking the other with her forearm, earning a deep gash. Her own blood flew in the air as she spun, each droplet tossing out a translucent atium image, and flared pewter, punching Shan square in the stomach. Shan bent slightly, but she didn't fall.
ATM's almost gone. Only a few seconds left.
So she extinguished her ATM early, exposing herself. Shan smiled wickedly, coming up from her crouch, right-hand dagger swinging confidently. She assumed that Vin had run out of ATM and therefore assumed that she was exposed, vulnerable. At that moment, Vin burned her last bit of ATM. Shan paused just briefly in confusion, giving Vin an opening as a phantom arrow streaked through the mists overhead. Vin caught the real arrow as it followed, the grainy wood burning her fingers, then rammed it down into Shan's chest. The shaft snapped in Vin's hand, leaving about an inch protruding from Shan's body. The woman stumbled backward, staying on her feet.
Damn pewter!
Vin ripped a sword from his sheath beside the unconscious soldier at her feet. She jumped forward, gritting her teeth in determination, and Shan, still dazed, raised a hand to push against the sword. Vin let the weapon go. It was just a distraction, and she slammed the second half of the broken arrow into Shan's chest just beside its counterpart. This time, Shan dropped. She tried to rise, but one of the shafts must have done some serious damage to her heart, for her face paled. She struggled for a moment, then fell lifeless to the stones. Vin stood, trying to wipe the blood from her cheek with her arm, only to realize that her bloody wound was just making her face look worse. Vin glanced back toward the keep, bidding farewell to Elend, then pushed herself out into the night.
Other men worry whether or not they will be remembered. I have no such fears. Even disregarding the terrorist prophecies, I have brought such chaos, conflict, and hope to this world that there is little chance that I will be forgotten. I worry about what they will say of me. Historians can make what they wish of the past. In 1,000 years' time, will I be remembered as the man who protected mankind from a powerful evil? Or will I be remembered as a tyrant who arrogantly tried to make himself a legend?
I don't know. Breeze would make a pretty good minister of sanitation.
No, honestly, I don't see why I consistently prove to be the target of you people's humor. Why must you choose the only dignified person in this crew as the butt of your mockery?
Because, my dear man, you are by far the best butt we have.
Oh, please. This is just getting juvenile. The teenage boy was the only one who found that comment amusing, Hammond.
I'm a soldier. Your witty verbal attacks have no effect on me, for I'm far too dense to understand them.
Kelsier leaned back against the cupboard. One problem with working at night was that he missed these evening gatherings in Clubs' kitchen.
I should be leaving, Master Kelsier. Mistress Vin should be about ready to leave.
I should get going myself. I still have to...
The outside kitchen door suddenly opened. Vin stood silhouetted by the dark mist, wearing nothing but her dressing undergarments, a flimsy white shirt and shorts. Both were sprayed with blood.
Vin!
Her cheek bore a long, thin gash, and she had a bandage tied on one forearm.
I'm fine.
What happened to your dress?
You mean this?
Vin held up a ripped, soot-stained mass of blue cloth.
It got in the way. Sorry, Docs.
Lord Ruler, girl. What? Forget the dress. What happened to you?
Vin shook her head, shutting the door. Spook blushed furiously at her outfit, and Sazed immediately moved over, checking the wound on her cheek.
I think I did something bad. I kind of killed Shan Alariel.
You did what?
Vin flinched slightly at Sazed's ministrations.
She was Mistborn. We fought. I won.
You killed a fully trained Mistborn? You've practiced for barely 8 months.
Master Hammond, would you fetch my healer's bag?
Ham nodded.
You might want to grab her something to wear, too. I think poor Spook's about to have a heart attack.
What's wrong with this? It's not that much more revealing than some of the thief's clothing I've worn.
Those are undergarments, Vin.
So?
It's the principle of the matter. Young ladies do not run around in their undergarments, no matter how much those undergarments may resemble regular clothing.
Vin shrugged, sitting as Sazed held a bandage to her arm. She seemed exhausted. And not just from the fighting. What else happened at that party?
Where did you fight the Alariel woman?
Outside Keep Venture. I think some of the guards spotted me. Some of the nobles might have too, I'm not certain.
That's going to be trouble. Ugh. Of course, that cheek wound is going to be pretty obvious even with makeup. Honestly, you Allomancers. Don't you ever worry about what you're going to look like the day after you get into one of these fights?
I was kind of focused on staying alive, Docs.
He's just complaining because he's worried about you.
Ham returned with the bag.
That's what he does.
Both wounds will require immediate stitching, Mistress. The one on your arm hit the bone, I think.
Vin nodded and Sazed rubbed her arm with a numbing agent, then began to work. She bore it without much visible discomfort, though she obviously had her pewter flared.
She looks so exhausted.
She was such a frail-looking thing, mostly just arms and legs. Hammond put a cloak around her shoulders, but she appeared too tired to care.
And I brought her into this.
Of course, she should know better than to get herself into this kind of trouble. Eventually, Sazed finished his efficient sewing, then tied a new bandage around the arm wound. He moved on to the cheek.
Why would you fight a Mistborn? You should have run. Didn't you learn anything from your battle with the Inquisitors?
I couldn't get away without turning my back on her. Besides, she had more ATM than me. If I hadn't attacked, she would have chased me down. I had to strike while we were equally matched.
But how did you get into this in the first place? Did she attack you?
Vin glanced down at her feet.
I attacked first.
Why?
Vin sat for a moment, Sazed working on her cheek.
She was going to kill Elend.
Elend Venture? You risked your life, risked the plan, and our lives for that fool of a boy?
Vin looked up, glaring at him.
Yes.
What is wrong with you, girl? Elend Venture isn't worth this.
She stood angrily, Sazed backing away, the cloak falling to the floor.
He is a good man.
He's a nobleman.
So are you.
Vin waved a frustrated arm toward the kitchen and the crew.
What do you think this is, Kelsier? The life of a Ska? What do any of you know about Ska? Aristocratic suits, stalking your enemies in the night, full meals and nightcaps around the table with your friends? That's not the life of a Ska.
She took a step forward, glaring at Kelsier. He blinked in surprise at the outburst.
What do you know about them, Kelsier? When's the last time you slept in an alley? Shivering in the cold rain, listening to the beggar next to you cough with a sickness you knew would kill him. When's the last time you had to lay awake at night, terrified that one of the men in your crew would try to rape you? Have you ever knelt, starving, wishing you had the courage to knife the crew member beside you just so you could take his crust of bread? Have you ever cowered before your brother as he beat you all the time, feeling thankful because at least you had someone who paid attention to you?
The crew members just stared at her.
Don't talk to me about noblemen, and don't say things about people you don't know. You're no Ska. You're just noblemen without titles.
She turned, stalking from the room. Kelsier watched her go. He stood, dumbfounded, feeling a surprising flush of ashamed guilt. And for once, he found himself without anything to say. Vin didn't go to her room. She climbed to the roof where the mists curled in the quiet, unlit night. She sat down in the corner, the rough stone lip of the flat rooftop against her nearly bare back, wood beneath her. She was cold, but she didn't care. Her arm hurt a bit, but it was mostly numb. She didn't feel nearly numb enough herself. She crossed her arms, huddling down, watching the mists. She didn't know what to think, let alone what to feel. She shouldn't have exploded at Kelsier, but everything that had happened, the fight, Ellen's betrayal, it just left her feeling frustrated. She needed to be angry at someone.
You should just be angry at yourself. You're the one who let them get close. Now they're all just going to leave you.
She couldn't make it stop hurting. She could only sit and shiver as the tears fell, wondering how everything had collapsed so quickly. The trapdoor to the rooftop opened and Kelsier's head appeared.
Oh, Lord Ruler, I don't want to face him now.
She tried to wipe away her tears, but she only succeeded in aggravating the freshly stitched wound on her cheek. Kelsier closed the trapdoor behind him, then stood, so tall and proud, staring up at the mists.
He didn't deserve the things I said. None of them did.
Watching the mists is comforting, isn't it?
Vin nodded.
What is it I once told you? The mists protect you. They give you power. They hide you.
He looked down. Then he walked over and crouched before her, holding out a cloak.
There are some things you can't hide from, Vin. I know. I've tried.
She accepted the cloak, then wrapped it around her shoulders.
What happened tonight? What really happened?
Ellen told me that he didn't want to be with me anymore.
Was this before or after you killed his former fiancé?
Before.
And you still protected him?
I know. I'm an idiot.
No more than the rest of us.
Kelsier looked up into the mists.
I loved Mari, too. Even after she betrayed me. Nothing could change how I felt.
And that's why it hurts so much. I think I finally understand.
You don't stop loving someone just because they hurt you. It would certainly make things easier if you did.
Kelsier put a fatherly arm around her. She pulled close, trying to use his warmth to push away the pain.
I loved him, Kelsier.
Elland? I know.
No, not Elland. Rean. He beat me over and over and over. He swore at me. He yelled at me. He told me he'd betray me. Every day I thought about how much I hated him. And I loved him. I still do. Oh, it hurts so much to think that he's gone, even though he always told me he would leave.
Oh, child.
Kelsier pulled her close.
I'm so sorry.
Everyone leaves me. I can barely remember my mother. She tried to kill me, you know. She heard voices in her head, and they made her kill my baby sister. She's probably going to kill me next, but Rean stopped her. Either way, she left me. After that, I clung to Rean. He left too. I love Elland, but he doesn't want me anymore.
Vin looked up at Kelsier.
When are you going to go? When will you leave me?
Vin, I don't know. This job, the plan is...
She searched his eyes, looking for the secrets therein.
What are you hiding from me, Kelsier? Something that dangerous?
She wiped her eyes again, pulling away from him, feeling foolish. He looked down, shaking his head.
Look, now you've got blood all over my nice, dirty, pretend informant's clothing.
At least some of it is noble blood. I got Shan pretty good.
You're probably right about me, you know. I don't give the nobility much of a chance, do I?
Kelsier, I shouldn't have said those things. You're good people, and this plan of yours... Well, I realize what you're trying to do for the Ska.
No, Vin. What you said was true. We're not really Ska.
But that's good. If you were regular Ska, you wouldn't have the experience or courage to plan something like this.
They might lack experience, but not courage. Our army lost, true, but they were willing, with minimal training, to charge a superior force. No, the Ska don't lack courage, just opportunity.
Then it's your position as half Ska, half nobleman that has given you opportunity, Kelsier. And you've chosen to use that opportunity to help your Ska half. That makes you worthy of being a Ska, if anything does.
Worthy to be a Ska. I like the sound of that. Regardless, perhaps I need to spend a little less time worrying about which nobleman to kill, and a little more time worrying about which peasants to help.
Vin nodded, pulling the cloak close as she stared up into the mists.
They protect us. Give us power. Hide us.
She hadn't felt like she needed to hide in a long time. But now, after the thing she'd said below, she almost wished that she could just blow away like a wisp of mist.
I need to tell him. It could mean the plan's success or failure. House Venture has a weakness, Kelsier.
It does?
Atium. They make certain the metal is harvested and delivered. It's the source of their wealth.
Of course. That's how they can pay the taxes. That's why they're so powerful. He would need someone to handle things for him.
Kelsier, don't do anything unless you have to. All right?
I don't know that I can promise anything, Vin. I'll try and think of another way. But as things stand now, Venture has to fall.
I understand.
I'm glad you told me, though.
She nodded.
And now I've betrayed him, too.
There was a peace in knowing, however, that she hadn't done it out of spite. Kelsier was right. House Venture was a power that needed to be toppled. Oddly, her mention of the house seemed to bother Kelsier more than it did her. He sat, staring into the mists, strangely melancholy. He reached down, absently scratching his arm.
The scars. It isn't House Venture he's thinking about. It's the pits. Her. Kelsier?
Yes?
His eyes were still looking a bit absent as he watched the mists.
I don't think that Mare betrayed you.
I'm glad you think that way.
No, I really mean it. The Inquisitors were waiting for you when you got to the center of the palace, right?
Kelsier nodded.
They were waiting for us, too.
You and I fought some guards, made some noise. When Mari and I went in, we were quiet. We'd planned for a year. We were stealthy, secretive, and very careful. Someone set a trap for us.
Mari was an Allomancer, right? They could have just sensed you coming.
We had a smoker with us. Red was his name. The Inquisitors killed him straight off. I've wondered if he was the traitor, but that just doesn't work. Red didn't even know about the infiltration until that night when we went and got him. Only Mari knew enough. Dates, times, objectives to have betrayed us. Besides, there's the Lord Ruler's comment. You didn't see him, Vin. Smiling as he thanked Mari. There was honesty in his eyes. They say the Lord Ruler doesn't lie. Why would he need to?
Vin sat quietly for a moment, considering what he'd said.
Kelsier, I think that Inquisitors can sense our Allomancy even when we're burning copper.
Impossible.
I did it tonight. I punctured Shan's copper cloud to locate her and the other assassins. That's how I got to Elend in time.
You've got to be mistaken.
It happened before, too. I can feel the Lord Ruler's touch on my emotions even when I'm burning copper, and I swear that when I was hiding from that Inquisitor who was hunting me, he found me when he shouldn't have been able to. Kelsier, what if it's possible? What if hiding yourself by smoking isn't just a simple matter of whether or not your copper is on? What if it just depends on how strong you are?
It could be possible, I suppose.
Then Mari wouldn't have had to betray you. Inquisitors are extremely powerful. The ones who were waiting for you, maybe they just felt you burning metals. They knew that an Allomancer was trying to sneak into the palace. Then the Lord Ruler thanked her because she was the one who gave you away. She was the Allomancer burning tin that led them to you.
Kelsier's face took on a troubled expression. He turned, sitting himself so he was directly in front of her.
Do it now, then. Tell me what metal I'm burning.
Vin closed her eyes, flaring bronze, listening, feeling, as Marsh had taught her. She remembered her solitary trainings, time spent focusing on the waves Breeze, Ham, or Spook gave off for her. She tried to pick out the fuzzing rhythm of Allomancy, tried to... For a moment, she thought she felt something. Something very strange, unlike any Allomantic rhythm she'd felt before. But it wasn't coming from Kelsier, it was distant, far away. She focused harder, trying to pick out the direction it was coming from. But suddenly, as she focused harder, something else drew her attention. A more familiar rhythm, coming from Kelsier. She opened her eyes.
Pewter. You're burning pewter.
Kelsier blinked in surprise.
Impossible. Again.
She closed her eyes.
Tin. Now steel. You changed as soon as I spoke.
Bloody hell.
I was right. You can feel Allomantic pulses through copper. They're quiet, but I guess you just have to focus hard enough to...
Vin, don't you think Allomancers have tried this before? You don't think that after 1,000 years' time, someone would have noticed that you could pierce a copper cloud? I've even tried it. I focused for hours on my master, trying to sense something through his copper cloud.
But why...
It must have something to do with strength, like you said. Inquisitors can push and pull harder than any regular Mistborn. Perhaps they're so strong they can overwhelm someone else's metal.
But Kelsier, I'm not an Inquisitor.
But you're strong. Stronger than you have any right to be. You killed a full Mistborn tonight.
By luck? I just tricked her.
Allomancy is nothing but tricks, Vin. No, there's something special about you. I noticed it on that first day when you shrugged off my attempts to push and pull your emotions.
It can't be that, Kelsier. Maybe I've just practiced with bronze more than you. I don't know. I just...
Vin, you're still too self-effacing. You're good at this. That much is obvious. If that's why you can see through copper clouds, well, I don't know. But learn to take a little pride in yourself, kid. If there's anything I can teach you, it's how to be self-confident.
Vin smiled.
Come on.
Oh. Kelsier stood and held out a hand to help her up.
Cezanne is going to fret all night if you don't let him finish stitching that cheek wound. And Ham's dying to hear about your battle. Good job leaving Shan's body back at Keep Venture, by the way. When House Alario hears that she was found dead on Venture property... Yep.
Vin allowed him to pull her up, but she glanced toward the trapdoor apprehensively.
I don't know if I want to go down yet, Kelsier. How can I face them?
Oh, don't worry. If you didn't say some stupid things every once in a while, you certainly wouldn't fit in with this group. Come on.
Finn hesitated, then let him lead her back down to the warmth of the kitchen.
Elland, how can you read at a time like this?
Elland looked up from his book.
It calms me.
Jast raised an eyebrow. The young Lacal sat impatiently on the couch. The window shades were drawn, partially to hide the light of Elland's reading lantern, partially to keep out the mists. Though Elland would never admit it, the swirling fog made him just a bit nervous. Noblemen weren't supposed to be afraid of such things, but that didn't change the fact that the deep, caliginous mist was just plain creepy.
Your father is going to be livid when you get back.
Elland shrugged, though this comment did make him a little bit nervous. Not because of his father, but because of what had happened this night. Some Allomancers had apparently been spying on Elland's meeting with his friends. What information had they gathered? Did they know about the books he'd read? Fortunately, one of them had tripped, falling through Elland's skylight. After that, it had been confusion and chaos, soldiers and ball-goers running about in a semi-panic. Elland's first thought had been for the books, the dangerous ones, the ones that if the obligators found he possessed could get him into serious trouble. So in the confusion, he dumped them all in a bag and followed Jast's down to the palace side exit. Grabbing a carriage and sneaking out of the palace grounds had been an extreme move, perhaps, but it had been ridiculously easy. With the number of carriages fleeing the Venture grounds, not a single person had paused to notice that Elland himself was in the carriage with Jast's.
It's probably all died down by now. People will realize that House Venture wasn't trying to attack them and that there wasn't really any danger, just some spies who got careless.
He should have returned by now. However, his convenient absence from the palace gave him a perfect excuse to check on another group of spies. And this time, Elland himself had sent them. Jast jumped and Elland closed his book, then opened the carriage door. Felt, one of the House Venture chief spies, climbed into the carriage, nodding his hawkish, mustached face respectfully to Elland, then Jast.
Well?
Felt sat down with the keen litheness of his kind.
The building is ostensibly a woodcrafter's shop, my lord. One of my men has heard of the place. It's run by one Master Cladent, a scar carpenter of no small skill.
Why did Valette's steward come here?
We think the shop is a front, my lord. We've been observing it ever since the steward led us here as you ordered. However, we've had to be very careful. There are several watch nests hidden on its roof and top floors.
An odd precaution for a simple craftsman's shop, I should think.
That's not the half of it, my lord. We managed to sneak one of our best men up to the building itself. We don't think he was spotted, but he had a remarkably difficult time hearing what's going on inside. The windows are sealed and stuffed to keep in sound.
What do you think it means?
It's got to be an underground hideout, my lord, and a good one. If we hadn't been watching carefully and been certain what to look for, we would never have noticed the signs. My guess is that the men inside, even the terrace men, are members of a ska thieving crew. A very well-funded and skilled one.
A ska thieving crew? And Lady Valette too?
Likely, my lord.
Why would they send one of their members to balls? To perform a scam of some sort, perhaps?
My lord, do you want us to break in? I've got enough men to take their entire crew.
No. Call your men back, and tell no one of what you've seen this night.
Yes, my lord.
Felt climbed out of the coach.
Lord Ruler, no wonder she didn't seem like a regular noblewoman. It wasn't her royal upbringing. She's just a thief.
Elland nodded, thoughtful, not certain what to think.
You owe me an apology. I was right about her, eh?
Perhaps, but in a way you were wrong about her too. She wasn't trying to spy on me. She was just trying to rob me.
So?
I need to think about this.
Elland reached out and knocked for the carriage to start moving. He sat back as the coach began to roll back toward Keep Venture. Valette wasn't the person that she'd said she was. However, he'd already prepared himself for that news. Not only had Jast's words about her made him suspicious, Valette herself hadn't denied Ellen's accusations earlier in the night. It was obvious she had been lying to him, playing a part. He should have been furious. He realized this, logically, and a piece of him did ache of betrayal. But oddly, the primary emotion he felt was one of relief.
You've had me worrying over this for days, Jast. I felt so sick that I could barely function. All because I thought that Valette was a traitor.
But she is. Ellen, she's probably trying to scam you.
Yes, but at least she probably isn't a spy for another house. In the face of all the intrigue, politics, and backbiting that has been going on lately, something as simple as a robbery feels slightly refreshing.
But...
it's only money, Jast.
Money is kind of important to some of us, Ellen.
Not as important as Valette. That poor girl. All this time, she must have been worrying about the scam she would have to pull on me.
Jast sat for a moment. Then he finally shook his head.
Ellen, only you would be relieved to find out that someone was trying to steal from you. Need I remind you that the girl has been lying this entire time? You might have grown attached to her, but I doubt her own feelings are genuine.
You may be right. I don't know, Jast. I feel like I know this girl. Her emotions. They just seem too real, too honest to be false.
Doubtful.
We don't have enough information to judge her yet. Felt thinks she's a thief, but there have to be other reasons a group like that would send someone to balls. Maybe she's an informant. Or maybe she is a thief, but not one who ever intended to rob me. She spent an awful lot of time mixing with the other nobility. Why would she do that if I was her target? In fact, she spent relatively little time with me, and she never plied me for gifts.
Ellen imagined his meeting with Valette as a pleasant accident, an event that had thrown a terrible twist into both of their lives. He smiled, then shook his head.
No, Jast. There's more here than we're seeing. Something about her doesn't make sense.
I suppose, Elle.
Ellen sat upright, a sudden thought occurring to him. A thought that made his speculations about Valette's motivation seem far less important.
Jast, she's Ska.
And?
And she fooled me. Fooled us both. She acted the part of an aristocrat almost perfectly.
An inexperienced aristocrat, perhaps.
I had a real Ska thief with me. Think of the questions I could have asked her.
Questions? What kind of questions?
Questions about being Ska. That's not the point, Jast. She fooled us. If we can't tell the difference between a Ska and a noblewoman, that means that the Ska can't be very different from us. And if they're not that different from us, what right do we have treating them as we do?
Ellen, I don't think you're looking at this in perspective. We're in the middle of a house war.
Ellen nodded distractedly.
I was so hard on her this evening. Too hard?
He had wanted her to believe, totally and completely, that he didn't want anything more to do with her. Part of that had been genuine, for his own worries had convinced him that she couldn't be trusted. And she couldn't be, not at the moment. Either way, he'd wanted her to leave the city. He thought that the best thing to do was break off the relationship until the house war was through.
But assuming she's really not a noblewoman, then there's no reason for her to leave.
Ellen, are you even paying attention to me?
I think I did something wrong tonight. I wanted to get Valette out of Luthadel, but now I think I hurt her for no reason.
Bloody hell, Ellen. Allomancers were listening to our conference this night. Do you realize what could have happened? What if they decided to kill us rather than just spy on us?
Ah, yes, you're right. It's best if Valette leaves anyway. Anyone close to me will be in danger during the days to come.
You're hopeless.
I try my best. But seriously, there's no use worrying. The spies gave themselves away and likely got chased off. Or even captured in the chaos. We now know some of the secrets that Valette is hiding, so we're ahead there too. It's been a very productive night.
That's an optimistic way of looking at it, I guess.
Once again, I try my best.
Even still, he would feel more comfortable when they got back to Keep Venture. Perhaps it had been foolhardy to sneak away from the palace before hearing the details of what had happened, but Ellen hadn't exactly been thinking clearly at the time. Besides, he'd had the previously arranged meeting with Felt to attend, and the chaos had made a perfect opportunity to slip away. The carriage slowly pulled up to the Venture gates.
You should go.
Ellen slipped out of the carriage door.
Take the books.
Jast nodded, grabbing the sack, then bidding Ellen farewell as he shut the carriage door. Ellen waited as the carriage rolled back away from the gates. Then he turned and walked the rest of the way to the keep, the surprised gate guards letting him pass with ease. The grounds were still ablaze with light. Guards were already waiting for him at the front of the keep.
My lord, your father.
Yes. I assume I'm to be taken to him immediately?
Yes, my lord.
Lead on then, captain.
They entered through the lord's entrance on the side of the building. Lord Strathventure stood in his study, speaking with a group of guard officers. Ellen could tell from the pale faces that they had received a firm scolding, perhaps even threats of beatings. They were noblemen, so Venture couldn't execute them, but he was very fond of the more brutal disciplinary forms. Lord Venture dismissed the soldiers with a sharp gesture, then turned to Ellen with hostile eyes. Ellen frowned, watching the soldiers go. Everything all seemed a little too tense.
Well?
Well, what?
Where have you been?
Oh, I left.
Fine. Endanger yourself if you wish, boy. In a way, it's too bad that Mistborn didn't catch you. They could have saved me a great deal of frustration.
Mistborn? What Mistborn?
The one that was planning to assassinate you.
Ellen blinked in startlement.
So, it wasn't just a spying team?
Oh no, an entire assassination team sent here after you and your friends.
Lord Ruler, I didn't expect the House War to get so dangerous so quickly. At least, not for me.
How do we know it was a Mistborn?
Our guards managed to kill her as she was fleeing.
A full Mistborn? Killed by common soldiers?
Archers. Apparently, they took her by surprise.
And the man who fell through my skylight?
Dead. Broken neck.
That man was still alive when we fled. What are you hiding, Father?
The Mistborn. Anyone I know?
I'd say so.
Lord Venture settled into his desk chair, not looking up.
It was Shan Ilario.
Shan?
They'd been engaged, and she'd never even mentioned that she was an Allomancer. That probably meant she'd been a plant all along. Perhaps House Ilariel had planned to have Ellen killed once an Ilariel grandson was born to the house title.
You're right, Joss. I can't avoid politics by ignoring it. I've been a part of it all for much longer than I assumed.
His father was obviously pleased with himself. A high-profile member of House Ilariel was dead on Venture grounds after trying to assassinate Ellen. With such a triumph, Lord Venture would be insufferable for days.
Did we capture any of the assassins alive, then?
One fell to the courtyard as he was trying to flee. He got away. He might have been Mistborn, too. We found one man dead on the roof, but we aren't sure if there were others in the team or not. Some of the guards claim there was a third Mistborn fighting the other two, but I doubt the reports. It wasn't one of ours.
Ellen paused.
A third Mistborn fighting the other two?
Maybe someone found out about the assassination and tried to stop it.
Why would someone else's Mistborn try to protect you?
Maybe they just wanted to stop an innocent man from being murdered.
You are an idiot, boy. You understand that, right?
Ellen flushed, then turned away. It didn't appear that Lord Venture wanted anything more, so Ellen left. He couldn't go back to his rooms, not with the broken window and the guards, so he made his way to a guest bedroom, calling for a set of haze killers to watch outside his door and balcony, just in case. He prepared for bed, thinking about the conversation. His father was probably right about the third Mistborn. That just wasn't the way things worked.
But that's the way it should be. The way it could be, maybe.
There were so many things Ellen wished he could do. But his father was healthy and young for a lord of his power. It would be decades before Ellen assumed the house title, assuming he even survived that long. He wished he could go to Valette, talk to her, explain his frustrations. She'd understand what he was thinking. For some reason, she always seemed to understand him better than anyone else.
And she's ska.
He couldn't get over the thought. He had so many questions, so many things he wanted to find out from her.
Later.
He climbed into bed,
For now, focus on keeping the house together.
His words to Valette in that area hadn't been false. He needed to make certain his family survived the house war. After that, well, perhaps they could find a way to work around the lies and the scams.
Though many Terrasmen express a resentment of Helenium, there is also envy. I have heard the Pac-Men speak in wonder of the Heleni cathedrals, with their amazing stained glass windows and broad halls. They also seem very fond of our fashion. Back in the cities, I saw that many young Terrasmen had traded in their furs and skins for well-tailored gentlemen's suits.
Two streets over from Clubs's shop, there was a building of unusual height compared with those surrounding it. It was some kind of tenement, Vin thought, a place to pack ska families. She'd never been inside of it, however. She dropped a coin, then shot herself up along the side of the six-story building. She landed lightly on the rooftop, causing a figure crouching in the darkness to jump in surprise.
It's just me.
Vin snuck quietly across the sloped roof. Spook smiled at her in the night. As the crew's best tin eye, he usually got the most important watches. Recently, those were the ones during the early evening. That was the time when conflict among the great houses was most likely to turn to outright fighting.
Are they still going at it?
Vin flared her tin, scanning the city. A bright haze shone in the distance, giving the mists a strange luminescence. Spook nodded, pointing toward the light.
Keep hasting. Alarial soldiers with the attacking tonight.
Vin nodded. Keep Hastings' destruction had been expected for some time. It had suffered a half dozen raids from different houses during the last week. Allies withdrawing, finances wrecked, it was only a matter of time before it fell. Oddly, none of the houses attacked during the daytime. There was a feigned air of secrecy about the war, as if the aristocracy acknowledged the Lord Ruler's dominance and didn't want to upset him by resorting to daylight warfare. It was all handled at night, beneath a cloak of mists.
Wasn't the want of this.
Spook, could you try to speak, normal?
Spook nodded toward a dark structure in the distance.
The Lord Ruler? He wants the fighting.
Vin nodded.
Cassier was right. There hasn't been much of an outcry from the Ministry or the Palace regarding the House War, and the garrison is taking its time getting back to Luthadel. The Lord Ruler expected the House War and intends to let it run its course like a wildfire left to blaze and renew a field.
Except this time, as one fire died, another would start, Kelsier's attack on the city.
Assuming Marsh can find out how to stop the Steel Inquisitors, assuming we can take the palace, and of course, assuming Kelsier can find a way to deal with the Lord Ruler.
Vin shook her head. She didn't want to think poorly of Kelsier, but she just didn't see how it was all going to happen. The garrison wasn't back yet, but reports said it was close, perhaps only a week or two out. Some noble houses were falling, but there didn't seem to be the air of general chaos that Kelsier had wanted. The final empire was strained, but she doubted that it would crack. However, maybe that wasn't the point. The crew had done an amazing job of instigating a house war. Three entire great houses were no more, and the rest were seriously weakened. It would take decades for the aristocracy to recover from their own squabbling.
We've done an amazing job. Even if we don't attack the palace, or if that attack fails, we'll have accomplished something wonderful.
With Marsha's intelligence about the Ministry and Sazed's translation of the logbook, the rebellion would have new and useful information for future resistance. It wasn't what Kelsier had hoped for. It wasn't a complete toppling of the final empire. However, it was a major victory, one that the Ska could look to for years as a source of courage. And, with the start of surprise, Vin realized that she felt proud to have been part of it. Perhaps, in the future, she could help start a real rebellion, one in a place where the Ska weren't quite so beaten down.
If such a place exists.
Vin was beginning to understand that it wasn't just Luthadel and its soothing stations that made Ska subservient. It was everything. The obligators, the constant work in field and mill, the mindset encouraged by 1,000 years of oppression. There was a reason why Ska rebellions were always so small. The people knew, or thought they knew, that there was no fighting against the final empire. Even Vin, who'd assumed herself a liberated thief, had believed the same. It had taken Kelsier's insane over-the-top plan to convince her otherwise. Perhaps that was why he'd set such lofty goals for the crew. He'd known that only something this challenging would make them realize, in a strange way, that they could resist. Spook glanced at her. Her presence still made him uncomfortable.
Spook, you know that Alan broke off his relationship with me.
Spook nodded, perking up slightly.
But I still love him. I'm sorry, Spook. But it's true.
He looked down, deflating.
It's not you. Really, it isn't. It's just that... well, you can't help who you love. Trust me, there are some people I really would rather not have loved. They didn't deserve it.
I understand.
Can I still keep the handkerchief?
He shrugged.
Thank you. It does mean a lot to me.
He looked up, staring out into the mists.
I'm nodding a fool. I knew it wasn't not to happen. I see things, Vin. I see lots of things.
You've been an Alamancer for a long time?
Wasn't the snap when I was 5. Barely even remember it.
And since then you've been practicing with Tin?
Mostly. Wasn't a good thing for me. Letting me see, letting me hear, letting me feel.
Any tips you can pass on?
He paused thoughtfully, sitting by the edge of the slanted rooftop, one foot dangling over the side.
Tin burning. Nodding about the seeing. Wasn't about the not seeing.
What do you mean?
When burning, everything comes. Lots of everything. Distractions here, there. Ifing the power of wants. Ignoring the distractions of both.
If you want to be good at burning tin, learn to deal with distraction. It isn't about what you see. It's about what you can ignore. Interesting.
When looking, seeing the mist, and seeing the houses, and feeling the wood, and hearing the rats below, choose one, and don't get distracted.
Good advice.
They both jumped and ducked down. Kelsier walked across the rooftop.
We really have to find a better way of warning people that we're coming up. Every time I visit a spy nest, I worry that I'm going to startle someone off the rooftop.
Vin stood, dusting off her clothing. She wore mist cloak, shirt, and trousers. It had been days since she'd worn a dress. She only put in token appearances at Mansion Renault. Kelsier was too worried about assassins to let her stay there for long.
At least we bought Kliss's silence.
It's time?
Nearly so, at least. I want to stop somewhere on the way.
Vin nodded. For their second meeting, Marsh had chosen a location that he was supposedly scouting for the Ministry. It was a perfect opportunity to meet, since Marsh had an excuse to be in the building all night, ostensibly seeking for any Alamantic activity nearby. He would have a soother with him for a good deal of the time, but there would be an opening near the middle of the night when Marsh figured he would have a good hour alone. Not much time if he had to sneak out and back, but plenty of time for a pair of stealthy Mistborn to pay him a quick visit. They bid farewell to Spook and pushed off into the night. However, they didn't travel the rooftops for long before Kelsier led them down onto the street, landing and walking to conserve strength and metals.
It's kind of odd. I don't even think of the empty streets as creepy anymore.
The cobblestones were slick from mist water, and the deserted street eventually disappeared into the distant haze. It was dark, silent, and lonely. Even the war hadn't changed very much. Soldier groups, when they attacked, went in clumps, striking quickly and trying to overrun the defenses of an enemy house. Yet despite the emptiness of the nighttime city, Vin felt comfortable in it. The mists were with her.
Vin, I want to thank you.
Thank me? Why?
For the things you said about Mari. I've been thinking a lot about that day. About her. I don't know if your ability to see through copper clouds explains everything, but, well, given the choice, I'd rather believe that Mare didn't betray me.
Vin nodded, smiling. He shook his head ruefully.
It sounds foolish, doesn't it? As if all these years I've just been waiting for a reason to give in to self-delusion.
I don't know. Once, maybe I would have thought you a fool, but, well, that's kind of what trust is, isn't it? A willful self-delusion. You have to shut out that voice that whispers about betrayal and just hope that your friends aren't going to hurt you.
I don't think you're helping the argument any, Finn.
Makes sense to me. Distrust is really the same thing, only on the other side. I can see how a person, given the choice between two assumptions, would choose to trust.
But not you?
I don't know anymore.
This Elland of yours, there's a chance he was trying to scare you into leaving the city, right? Perhaps he said those things for your own good?
Maybe. But there was something different about him. About the way he looked at me. He knew I was lying to him, but I don't think he realized that I was Ska. He probably thought I was a spy from one of the other houses. Either way, he seemed honest in his desire to be rid of me.
Maybe you thought that because you were already convinced that he was going to leave you.
Vin glanced down at the slick, ashen street as they walked.
I don't know. And it's your fault, you know. I used to understand everything. Now it's all confused.
Yes, we've messed you up right properly.
You don't seem bothered by the fact.
Nope, not a bit. Ah, here we are.
He stopped beside a large, wide building, probably another Ska tenement. It was dark inside. Ska couldn't afford lamp oil, and they would have put out the building's central hearth after preparing the evening meal.
This?
Kelsier nodded, walking up to tap lightly on the door. To Vin's surprise, it opened, a wiry Ska face peeking out into the mists.
Lord Kelsier.
I told you I'd visit. Tonight seemed like a good time.
Come in, come in.
The man pulled the door open. He stepped back, careful not to let any of the mist touch him as Kelsier and Vin entered. Vin had been in Ska tenements before, but never before had they seemed so depressing. The smell of smoke and unwashed bodies was almost overpowering, and she had to extinguish her tin to keep from gagging. The wan light of a small coal stove showed a crowd of people packed together, sleeping on the floor. They kept the room swept of ash, but there was only so much they could do. Black stains still covered clothing, walls, and faces. There were few furnishings, not to mention far too few blankets to go around.
I used to live like this. The crew lairs were just as packed, sometimes more so. This was my life.
People roused as they saw that they had a visitor. Kelsier had his sleeves rolled up, Vin noticed, and the scars on his arms were visible, even by emberlight. They stood out starkly, running lengthwise up from his wrist past his elbows, crisscrossing and overlapping.
The survivor.
He's here. Kelsier, the Lord of the Mists.
That's a new one.
Vin stayed back as Kelsier smiled, stepping forward to meet the Ska. The people gathered around him, reaching out to touch his arms and cloak. Others just stood and stared, watching him with reverence.
I come to spread hope. House Hastings fell tonight. I know many of you worked in the Hastings smithies and steel mills. And honestly, I cannot say what this means for you. But it is a victory for all of us. For a time at least, your men won't die before the forges or beneath the whips of Hastings taskmasters.
House Hastings is gone. Who will feed us?
So frightened. I was never like that. Was I?
I'll send you another shipment of food. Enough to last you for a while, at least.
You've done so much for us.
Nonsense. If you wish to repay me, then stand up just a little straighter. Be a little less afraid. They can be beaten.
By men like you, Lord Kelsier, but not by us.
You'd be surprised.
The crowd began to make way for parents bringing their children forward. It seemed like everyone in the room wanted their sons to meet Kelsier personally. Vin watched with mixed feelings. The crew had reservations regarding Kelsier's rising fame with the Ska, though they kept their word and remained silent.
He really does seem to care for them.
Vin watched Kelsier pick up a small child.
I don't think it's just a show. This is how he is. He loves people. Loves the Ska. But it's more like the love of a parent for a child than it is like the love of a man for his equals.
What was so wrong? He was, after all, a kind of father to the Ska. He was the noble lord they always should have had. Still, Vin couldn't help feeling uncomfortable as she watched the faintly illuminated, dirty faces of those Ska families, their eyes worshipful and reverent. Kelsier eventually bid the group farewell, telling them he had an appointment. Vin and he left the cramped room, stepping out into blessedly fresh air. Kelsier remained quiet as they traveled toward Marsha's new soothing station, though he did walk with a bit more of a spring in his step.
You visit them often?
At least a couple houses a night. It breaks up the monotony of my other work.
Killing noblemen and spreading false rumors. Yes, visiting the Ska would be a nice break.
The meeting place was only a few streets away. Kelsier paused in a doorway as they approached, squinting in the dark night. Finally, he pointed at a window, just faintly lit.
Marsh said he'd leave a light burning if the other obligators were gone.
Window or stairs?
Stairs. The door should be unlocked, and the ministry owns the entire building. It will be empty.
Kelsier was right on both counts. The building didn't smell musty enough to be abandoned, but the bottom few floors were obviously unused. Vin and he quickly climbed up the stairwell.
Marsh should be able to tell us the ministry reaction to the house war.
They reached the top floor. Lantern light flickered through the door at the top, and he pushed it open.
Hopefully, that garrison won't get back too quickly. The damage is mostly done, but I'd like the war to go on for...
He froze in the doorway, blocking Vin's view. She flared pewter and tin immediately, falling to a crouch, listening for attackers. There was nothing.
No.
Then Vin saw the trickle of dark red liquid seeping around the side of Kelsier's foot. It pooled slightly, then began to drip down the first step. Kelsier stumbled into the room. Vin followed, but she knew what she'd see. The corpse lay near the center of the chamber, flayed and dismembered, the head completely crushed. It was barely recognizable as human. The walls were sprayed red.
Could one body really produce this much blood?
It was just like before in the basement of Cayman's lair, only with a single victim.
Inquisitor.
Kelsier, heedless of the gore, stumbled to his knees beside Marsha's corpse. He raised a hand as if to touch the skinless body, but remained frozen there, stunned.
Kelsier, this was recent. The Inquisitor could still be near.
He didn't move.
Kelsier!
Kelsier shook, looking around. His eyes met hers, and lucidity returned. He stumbled to his feet.
Window.
Vin rushed across the room. She paused, however, when she saw something sitting on a small desk beside the wall. A wooden table leg tucked half-hidden beneath a blank sheet of paper. Vin snatched it as Kelsier reached the window. He turned back, looking over the room one last time, then jumped out into the night.
Farewell, Marsh.